State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy is back for another edition of our Techie Talk podcast. Techie, how are you today?
Hey Joe, I'm back and good to see you on this lovely Wednesday morning. And I have a teeny bit more voice than I did last two times.
Yes, it's between allergies and upper chest issues. It's a tough time of year.
Well, I've actually been to my doctor twice, so in case you're all wondering, I did go to my doctor. I had a check-in right after the budget was done, because like I said before, and it's not like you guys know when I'm taking a sick day from work and you only have my attendance regarding sessions. And there are provisions in the house rules regarding me not spreading germs around the chamber, especially post-COVID. But I had to actually be in the office to vote and to make sure that the leadership knows I'm actually in the building. And I always tell folks that if you're not there and something goes sideways, it's much harder to deal with it if you're not physically there to deal with it. So, this is obviously a vast improvement from last week, but I did go to see my doctor right after the budget was done. And then I had a follow-up appointment yesterday. I got some more cough suppressants. And hopefully that will accelerate me feeling better as we try to keep these symptoms under control. But yeah, this has been a brutal pollen plus, this chest cold is tough.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. So we all wish you the best, Tacky, for sure, to keep you healthy and strong. Maybe you can send up, like with the Pope, you can send up smoke signals from the basement office at the State House and tell them you're there.
Unfortunately, my office is not one of the few that actually has a functioning fireplace. There's only three left that function.
Oh, you'll have to shoot it out the window then.
Yeah, I think we just do the old social media way of I have recovered from this current cough, but I'm sure many people are watching the events of the Vatican. I've not been up at early morning hours, but it's a once in a generation event, generally speaking, and it'll be interesting to see the direction of the church. I'm not Catholic myself, but it doesn't mean I don't have an interest. I think a lot of people have an interest, despite the religion, about how this is going to work. And given the fact it happens, like I said, once a generation, it's always an education over and over again about how this process works and selecting a new pope.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, if nothing else, interesting and unique and water cooler conversation.
Yeah, and it's also a sign of legacy in many ways, where popes pass on, and the choice of cardinals hopefully is a way for them to pass along their good works to the next generation. And like I said, I have no idea how it's going to play out. It's just interesting to find out that Pope Francis had such an enormous effect regarding the leadership of the church, with appointment 80% of cardinals voting, of which the youngest one's like 45.
Yeah, which is very young, actually, for sure. Yeah, so we will see how long it takes and what becomes of that. But in the meantime, as you mentioned, the House version of the budget is done. So that does that mean it's over to the Senate's hands now?
Yeah, Senate Ways and Means is releasing their version of the budget. Actually, they released it yesterday. The senators will start putting together their amendments. And advocates, since they have no early peak, is going to be pushing hard on the Senate side. So please don't send me emails about Senate amendments. I don't vote on Senate amendments. I do get those emails. They do actually have a higher budget spend than we do. So we'll see how it plays out. They get better numbers because they actually get the full April tax revenue numbers for them to readjust their budget projections. We don't. We only get the March numbers. And I've said several times, about 60 to 65% of our total revenues come in the month of April. So the House is always in this weird disadvantage in projections that the Senate has a bit of a more accurate figure for FY25. So we'll see how it plays out. But they won't debate their budget to Memorial Day week. So that's still basically, let's see, they'll start at 19th, so about 2-ish weeks away.
Yeah, I think, and did I read recently that actually the actual revenues came in much higher than anticipated?
I've not looked at the specific numbers, but based on my last conversation of Ways and Means Chair, a lot of numbers were coming good on personal income taxes. Were coming fairly well. Corporate were coming pretty well. Sales was a little low for a bit in the wintertime, but now so is the sign of inflation in the slowing economy. The funny thing is inflation actually creates a sales tax increase, but not a true increase because the price of goods have gone up and sales tax is a percentage of those goods. So per unit, it's a per unit versus per sales tax. So it's a little bit quirky. But we also kind of figured that there'd be some level of, for lack of a better term, hoarding as we get to tariff season, which may be some artificial bumps regarding sales tax revenue.
Yeah, oh no, that's definitely true. And we saw the trade deficits, balloon recently because of that, companies trying to stock up before the tariffs hit.
Yeah, I said last week I was very surprised by the negative GDP number, but I was not surprised by the huge trade surplus deficit number, largely because as you just said, people are been stockpiling since Trump's election day in November in anticipation for his tariffs. So as much as they could get in, they get in, and I wouldn't like have a panic attack or read too much into it. It's just business behavior based on anticipation of what the president says they're going to do. So I, like I said, is it cause for concern? Sure. Is it cause for panic? No. And I do think that people are taking more cautious approach to their money. I say this all the time, constantly on the show, but I think it's still true. I think they've always been very cautious with money. I think it's just the degree of caution keeps increasing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if nothing else, folks are looking more closely at their finances, and it might, who knows, it might spur some programs in the public school system when it comes to financial education that are needed, I think.
I always tell people at St. Anne's when I was at St. Anne's in 7th grade, Mrs. Sullivan taught us how to write checks and balance a checking book in class. Very, very useful skill, which I don't know if people, I don't think anybody knows how to write a check anymore. and why it's important to write things out correctly. But yeah, I mean, we live in an era where you charge stuff, you don't see it again. There's no way to record it. Recording things in your checkbook, you can actually see your numbers change. In my case, I use Quicken, guys. That's what I use, which gives me the ability to download, my credit card information, and I just manually update when I write checks and whatnot, so I can check basically on a daily basis where my spending is. But like I say, everyone's different. I mean, they use different softwares, whether it be an old-fashioned checking book, or you use software or Excel spreadsheets. But you're right. The financial literacy is kind of important because we live in an era where it's so easy to spend money without actually having physical cash or writing a check. Everything by plastic. But now also with things like what do you call it, Zelle, 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 where you're literally just transmitting cash from your account. It's not even a credit card. But I was watching an interview, I'm trying to which bank, but one of the big banks, I think it's JP Morgan, was talking about the number of fraud regarding using Zelle, where people end up giving money to fraudulent purchase of entities that were stealing the money, essentially. It was fraudulent on the side. And but there's no way to do recovery because it's not a credit card, where banks are required to investigate fraud and make the consumer whole. If it is a fraud on the other side, if there's an error by the merchant, the credit company pursues the merchant as well to find out what the error is and also make the customer whole. If you do direct money transfers from an account to a merchant and it's a fraudulent merchant or there's an error, you don't have a third-party recourse. And it's no different than you handing cash directly to a merchant or a fraudulent merchant. There's no way if you get your money back. So I know that people have this fear of credit cards. I understand that if you're late payment, there's the fee plus right now like 29% interest rates. But at the same time, though, credit cards do give you some protections. I'm not saying it's infinite protections, folks. I'm saying some protections regarding fraudulent transactions.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, and maybe for major purchases, it's worth considering using that just for those backups, if you will. The brick and mortar, there's still a place for it,
There absolutely is, because you can, obviously, see the merchant. I, like to be able to go see product personally than rather online. Obviously, I never used online shopping into COVID. That was like a learning curve for me. But I mean, it's part of our life now, and that's just how it is. All of us adapt to the environment we're in.
Actually, today we're as we're recording, the Fed is scheduled to meet later on and discuss interest rates. A lot of economists think they'll stay pat, probably won't make any changes right now.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve likes to look at 3 to 5 data points regarding the economy for making a decision. The problem, of course, is backward looking. So they're making decisions looking backwards a month. As I always like to say over and over again, forward looking doesn't exist because everything's a projection to it actually become real. So people have this very odd belief they can predict the future. It's like people like to play roulette. I think they can predict the balls going to be. Real life doesn't work out. You have to see what the data sets are, and you can try to project it out, and you can try to project, get ahead of it. But if you're wrong, you could do a lot of damage. But at the same time, though, if you're backward looking and you're too late, you can do a lot of damage. They're always in a no-win situation because you can make that argument either way that they reacted too early and reacted too late. It's kind of grossly unfair that people criticize them in that manner. It's easy to do when it's not your decision to make, where you could potentially screw up a $29 trillion economy on moving a few percentage points of interest rates. I think they're going to wait to see how things continue to roll regarding strong employment, despite waiting to see if there's actually any impact from the tariffs regarding consumer spending and inflation. One of the things that hasn't happened, which I'm still scratching my head about, is that oil prices have dropped under $60 a barrel a few times already, but has not appeared at the pump. And it's not appearing in the price of goods. And I'm not sure exactly what's going on here, because the Saudis are also releasing another 400 million barrels a day oil come the summertime, which is going to drive down the price of oil. And globally speaking, if you're a fossil fuel company, you're not pumping any more out at this point, and you're not looking to drill anymore. The price is so low, they're reaching de minimis return. So, this drill baby drill is kind of all crap. So if you're a supporter of fossil fuels, this massive spike of massive spike drop of the prices, it hurts fossil fuel companies a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if they're anticipating, a rebound in the economy later this year. Maybe that's why they're keeping prices elevated on the retail level. I don't understand it either.
I don't understand. Yeah, I really don't understand it either, because normally when there's a shift of even like $4 a barrel during the course of a week, you can see the gas prices here shift maybe a penny, maybe two, up or down. If there's a big spike of $5 or more, you can see it move 10 cents. But the prices here have been steadily between 270 and 280 in the Quincy area. It gets to Boston, gets up to about 290, 310 because of the cost of rent. Only thing I can think of is the cost of doing business, maybe one of the reasons the price is staying elevated. I'm not sure what's going on here, but the president talks about his $1.98 gallon of gas, which doesn't exist in this country. That's the wholesale price coming out of the refinery. It doesn't count any other add-ons, including tariffs on fuel, plus taxes, plus the profit margins for the delivery services associated with gas. So, like when that truck pulls in to put gas into the gas station, obviously that gas truck company needs to make money, which is part of the baseline cost of the fuel. So I'm very perplexed by the fact gas prices hasn't moved, despite the fact oil's dropped basically $10 in 3 months.
I mean, it is lower than a year ago, but like you say, it should be lower recently as well. And like you said, taxes too. I think 50, almost 50 cents per gallon is state and federal taxes on fuel.
It is. And at some point, that needs to be changed as well with the advent of more electric cars nationally. We're basically subsidizing the electric cars owners because they're not buying gas, which results in lower gas taxes over longer periods of time, as gas cars are increasingly efficient, plus the fact that you got less cars using gas to drive with. Means that myself, who still has a gas car, is subsidizing the road money that electric cars use.
Yes, you're right, right. So maybe there needs to be some kind of a electric vehicle tax as well.
They call it a vehicle mileage tax. This idea has been bouncing around for a very long time, like 25 plus years. This is not a new idea. And every so often, we get advocates every so many years make an appearance advocating for us to do this at the state level. The problem, of course, is all tied to car registration, which means people got to put their commercial vehicles outside of Massachusetts to avoid the vehicle mileage tax and instead continue to pay a gas tax. So the federal government needs to, at some point, make a decision regarding how they're going to address the fact that our roads are built on gas tax. And if we don't have cars, passengers, vehicle owners paying gas tax, where is that money going to come from?
Because even though electric cars don't use gas, they're still using the roads, and they're still wear and tear on the roads from those vehicles.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that every car that doesn't pay the gas tax, you're now subsidizing that car owner.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't thought of that, but it's true. Sure.
Yeah, it's like solar energy credits. You're subsidizing the solar panel owner next door, net metering, which is when you overdrain power and then you pay the homeowner for the overgeneration. Again, you're subsidizing the homeowner on your electric bill. There's all kinds of things where you are not receiving any direct benefit, but you're receiving a benefit, but you're actually also subsidizing your neighbors.
Seeing as you brought up one of the topic of energy, I think I read last week where gas companies now are not going to charge as much as they have in the past to maintain the pipelines and make repairs. The states told them to lower that.
Yeah, that's a tricky wicket because we live in Massachusetts and our pipeline system is really old. So over the decades, you have actually cast iron pipelines for natural gas, which actually holds up pretty well. They're about 50 plus years lifespan, but it is a lifespan. It's not forever. And a lot of gas pipelines have moved to plastic, which again also has a longer lifespan than cast iron. But the shifting ground, especially on the coastlines, results in minor gas line ruptures. We may remember that after the 2010 storms, and then we had the 2017 storms, but there were ruptures all over the city. That National Grid was everywhere, gas line repairs, because the ground underneath shifted. And at some point, the lack of, I don't know, anything underneath the pipe created minor ruptures, all over the city. So, pulling back temporarily, the capital costs in your bill, which is built into your distribution, the capital cost repair, it will give you some short-term relief. But ultimately, it needs to be addressed. And one of the things that is really troublesome for our energy system is deferred maintenance.
Not only with all infrastructure, right? Not just gas lines.
Yeah, and maintenance and repair of capital projects will only go up in price. It never goes down because the cost of materials and labor only goes up. So government has this bad habit too on deferred maintenance, because we're always trying to prioritize the worst first. It's it's just how it is. So when you have a brand new structure, it's wonderful. But so when you visit other countries that are developing countries, and I need to go overseas again. I have not been overseas in too long. If you visit a location more than once, and you observe the infrastructure, it would be roads or rail or public transit or buses or whatever. If you visit enough times, you can notice the degradation of the roads and the public transit because, again, maintenance costs will go up over time. So, people always marvel, for example, in China, but all this new road stuff. But they've not reached that 30-year lifespan, which they're now hitting regarding road maintenance. And if we defer, they're going to have the same problem that we have, as well as all the other countries where the new infrastructure isn't new anymore. And there is economic development with government investment in capital maintenance because that creates jobs and has that spillover effect to materials. As well as everything from Dunkin' Donuts to food to concrete, right? So people love the idea of building new, but in government, if you do maintenance, it does create economic stimulus.
No, absolutely, yeah, and can see that in industry as well. The government can have a huge impact on. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is the shipbuilding industry and how it was, encouraged by the government for years.
Well, yes. Same thing of rail, which a government encouraged because rail is still the largest goods transport system in the country. Actually, most of the planet is very dependent on rail for moving large scale goods. That's why things like Amtrak is never truly going to go away. It's still kind of a part of an essential service, that rail system. The passenger rail still does matter. So, government, whether it be municipal, state, or federal, deferred maintenance investment, is a big part of our economic driver.
Yep, absolutely. I know at least here in New England, we have an unusually strong tie to Canadian government and Canadian work, right? Canadian industry.
Yeah, Massachusetts law is trading partner. Historically has been Canada. It's just we ship goods and services up to Canada. We buy energy from Canada. We send back produce and complex machinery and services. The economy in this country is service driven. We will sell you services. And neighboring countries, need our engineers, our technology people, our healthcare people. And we also export intelligence, right? We have all the schools here, so to speak. We export education in terms of people who are receive education. So, we're also dependent on Canadians visiting and us visiting Canada. It's a very short flight to Toronto. It's not even quite 2 hours to Toronto or Montreal. And if you like to drive, I mean, it's about a half a day, 10 to 9, 10, 12 hours, depending on where you're coming out of New England. And it's still a big part of our economy. So the tariffs will impact us a little bit differently because it's going to slow down a movement of goods and services, but also movement of people.
And of course, such a densely populated area for the biotech field and for it. Healthcare and for engineering, that's going to have a major impact here.
Yeah, and I said this over and over again, on a global level, individual citizens is taking this rather personally. Again, it's somewhat unusual because, vast majority of us, we just, figure politicians are being politicians, right? Ironically, this is coming from a politician. But it's not an unusual attitude on a global level, especially in democracies. But no, the people are taking it wicked personal. On a global level, what's going on here. And if it was more logical and sensible on this tariffs, I think people would be more understanding. But this non-existent math and mixed messaging and inability to pick a direction and just randomly utilizing national security threat powers for tariffs, they don't, explain anything about their objectives. frustrates not necessarily businesses, and eventually you, the consumer, will feel it on the road. It continues. Other countries' people are feeling the same thing.
And there's been no discussion about the benefit, any benefits that might come from this, in terms of, I don't know, reduced taxes. Or, I mean, nothing to say, here's why we're doing this, and here's how it will help you.
Yeah, I said this before a few times. I mean, it's a multiple choice, right? Pick the one you like, even if one says it's somewhat contrary to another. I mean, we receive some revenue, but it's not great revenue. And if you as a consumer doesn't spend money, they're going to ship less, which means they ain't going to be in there for revenue. Same thing as the sales tax during times of recession. When consumers don't spend, the sales tax doesn't move, it goes down. Same thing with excise tax. People are going to buy alcohol as much when they don't have money to buy alcohol with. And they don't want like Americans to be the place for other people to sell their goods, but he also wants other people to buy our goods. But as I say again, the world moves on American money. I don't care what any country says, the world moves on American money. So if American investment in terms of whether it be putting industry or selling services to another country means that there's less US investment, that means less jobs in that country. It means less jobs in that country. How are they going to buy our stuff? So, it's in the best interest of American capitalism to encourage economic development in other countries through capitalism to be able to, for those people to make enough money to buy US goods. When you listen to the president talk about things in isolation, in one item at a time, you may agree with it. And I'm not against tariffs that are targeted that other countries should open their markets to or create a balanced trading for certain products. But certain US companies have just given up on certain types of products to sell overseas. Certain businesses have given up selling overseas. Certain, like Uber's, for example, isn't in every country. They couldn't compete. They can't compete in Southeast Asia, for example. Uber had to pull out. So even if Trump goes, to Southeast Asian countries, said, you must take Uber, Uber won't go. They've already been there. They got destroyed. I mean, just because you're a US company doesn't mean you're going to have success in every country. Every country is different regarding whether or not they need the goods and services, right? It's not like a country that produces a whole ton of corn is going to buy more US corn, right? It doesn't make sense for them. So that's why, if they had targeted tariffs and the administration was looking to bolster certain aspects of our industries or try to open our market up regarding certain types of products, there'll be at least some basic understanding of what's going on. And the more bluster they make, it's largely, again, negotiating with us in the stock market by telling us stuff that tries to make people hopeful. And it, then turns out to be not entirely true. And then you get this mixed messaging. And it's about whether or not you can keep track of it all because there's so much going on in the world, and so much going on in your home as you're dealing with real life. And so much going on coming out of government in terms of messaging, plus all the other your personal interests, whether it be sports or celebrities or entertainment. You got all these things in your life, that are real life stuff that is you as an individual is a personal matter that you enjoy and keep track of. It's hard to track all this type of cross messaging, right? I mean, I think it was something less than 50 kilos of fentanyl came over the border from Canada to the U.S., but it's a war against fentanyl against Canada. And while you should have no fentanyl coming over the border, I mean, it's like literally like 10,000% more coming over the Mexican border than is over the Canadian border, which is why, this hyper focus should be on Mexico regarding trying to stem the flow of fentanyl. Not to mention the fact that fentanyl comes in through U.S. ports smuggled in, which again, we should have greater border security in terms of customs trying to find more illicit material coming in through our ports. So, it's a multi-tier battle, but it hyper focus in on these countries treating them as villains while not discussing the fact that we could, on the federal level, do more domestic security, against the war on drugs regarding basically the biggest way to get stuff in is shipping.
And interestingly too, we can talk a little about politics if you want, because a lot of the incumbent parties in other countries are seeing rewards from this quote unquote trade war, because voters are opposed to it, so they're keeping them in office.
Yeah, a few weeks back, I talked about watching elections around the country, and While this is an odd number year, few countries do have 3-year terms, and some had snap elections, 3 or 5 year terms. And last year, globally in democracies, free democracies, not this kind of like half-ass true democracies, incumbents were kicked out. It wasn't uniquely an American issue. Globally speaking, incumbent parties didn't do well in parliament, or didn't do well in the presidency. This cycle, so far with the Canadians, the Australians, and the Singaporeans, the incumbent party won. The opposition party had adopted a Trumpian position, and it did not sell. And mainstream parties, for example, in some countries like Germany, keep swapping back and forth rather consistently the two mainstream parties. But the two mainstream parties form coalition government. Very novel compared to Americans, right?
Yes.
No. This novelty of two mainstream parties actually forming a government, trying to figure out how to make it work. But some of these minor parties that have adopted a lot of the US policies regarding Trump got beat up pretty hard while the mainstream parties were able to hold the coalitions together in parliament. And while Canadians did not win an outright majority in parliament, they got enough of majority where they can form a coalition government to get their agenda done. Australians' incumbent party actually gained more seats, which will make him less reliant on coalition government. So I use the word incumbent party, not liberals, conservatives, labor, Tories. And the reason I say that is because the idea of what a conservative is in those countries isn't the same as we perceive in America. How liberalism works in those countries isn't the same as we think in America. And I think that's a false narrative that I don't like to promote. But I do think incumbency versus eliminating or uprooting the existing incumbents, is an indication. And Elon Musk's participation in other elections and his political antics isn't selling well out of U.S. borders too. So you got this kind of interesting effect where incumbent parties are heavily benefiting from the current situation from the United States, where people want some government stability. And also people who are willing to stand up to the United States. Singapore also had actually a very healthy majority of the incumbent party, which controls essentially 90% of the seats in parliament down there. We'll see as other elections come forward into the next 2026 cycle on countries that are, are kind of idea of a free democracy. Let's see if incumbent parties will hold on.
And we'll see in this country as well, with because the Democratic Party so far here, it's been pretty quiet. I mean there have been a few outliers, but for the most part there's been not been a surge upswell in outspokenness that I've heard.
Yeah, no, we talked about, Stephen Lynch having a rally. Congressman Lynch did a working person rally last Saturday. The Saturday before that, you had a kind of anti-Trump type rally before. You had this massive march nationally a couple, 3 Saturdays ago now, which is good for people to get out and participate. But I always say, going to a rally is great, but what's your next step, right? Those things become fleeting and a news story, but eventually people move on and it's about what's going on. I think, like a lot of countries that have federal elections, state elections or provincial elections in an even number, it's down to the municipal elections for those that have strong municipal elected governments like we do at our level, or provincial governments or county government, and see how it holds out. And people are asking me how come there's a spur of elections going on at municipal levels right now, and it's because of the presidential election will sometimes stimulate the interest for people to run locally. Regarding what happens there, whether you are happy or unhappy, it doesn't matter. People feel inspired to do so. Same thing in my election cycle, right? You have folks who run against us at the local level who are inspired by what's going on at the federal level as well, inside the same election cycle that you're in. Agree or disagree is not the point. The point is that it encourages people to want to run. So I'm not sure what messaging they'll all use, whether they're going to use messaging appealing to you as a local voter regarding local issues, or they're going to run on a national platform, on local, which honestly doesn't really work. But we shall see. And of course, as the disenfranchisements, right? I mean, you have Fernandez in Boston pleading guilty to basic kickbacks and corruption, and is still pending this, what's going on, that District 7 not-for-profit that she's supporting. And then, we have a situation with Representative Flanagan off the Cape, who has been also indicted by the federal government regarding stealing from his previous employer, among possibly other things that we don't know about. But what we do know is, stealing from a previous employer. So there's a lot, going on, which I fully get. I get it. Praise the Lord, this is chairman. Don't get me wrong. I get all unhappy too. Dean Tran's another one, a former Senate Dean Tran, out of the Fitchburg area, who was indicted with his sister regarding unemployment fraud and stealing ARPA money and also stealing people's guns, all kinds of crazy things up there as well. And but they're also human beings, and human beings will do human being things sometimes wrongly, and that's regrettable, but that's who we are. We're people too, and people are going to do bad and dumb stuff.
Right, and that's what sticks in people's minds. I think it was Tip O'Neill that said all politics is local, and it's really true.
Oh, it is. And people expect a lot of electeds to achieve a certain degree of image, which is unachievable because we're people, and people make good and bad decisions and everything else. And sometimes you may disagree or agree, but you think achieving perfection generally means, in my world, paralysis in making a decision. Because you're afraid of imperfection, meaning that you're going to upset people. Well, do you want someone that makes decisions, or you want someone that's continuously paralyzed because they're going to get trapped between two parties or sides coming at them? Because people, when they write in or call us, think that they're the majority view. They call it right into us. They really do. They think they represent the public, but they don't realize there are other people writing in, calling in the opposite position. Or maybe even an alternative position to the two binary yes and no's. So, from our standpoint, I do read and see, everyone's different positions on various issues. But it's always fascinating when people call it right and says, I know what people want. I know people want this. And this is how everyone is. And this is what they are thinking. And, like, thank you very much. As I look at the other 25 emails, that is contrary to what you're saying. So, but at the end, decisions need to be made, and whether you agree or disagree. But I always say, you want a person making a decision that's going to stay paralyzed.
Yeah, I mean, all you can do is make decisions based on the information that you have. That's all any of us can do, and not be afraid to make a mistake.
And you can correct it. Thankfully, we are the legislature, and something doesn't work, as I like to say, it takes time for things to mature. And when you pass a law, if it doesn't work, then you go back and revisit the issue and make a correction, working with the executive branch, why something does not work. And sometimes you can repeal stuff that doesn't work or make adjustments to something that maybe is a better compromise and palatable. I'm not going to speak to a number of different issues which people wrote into me about that are more municipal matters. But there are ways to address it. But sometimes you get people who want to double down, triple down, and dig in. And we have a presidential administration that has never admitted anything wrong, even though clearly they make mistakes, because guess what? They're human beings, and it happens. And if you're willing to admit that sometimes it doesn't always go the way you want, and I've said this many times here, but things don't always go the way I want that I thought was a good idea, and I've been wrong before, that's part of admitting that you're human like everybody else. But those that don't, they're just fooling themselves.
Hey, how did restaurant week go, Techie, for AAPI month?
I don't have any data on that. It's running to the 11th. The Patriot Ledger has a list of restaurants that you can look up that are participating. I think there's like a half dozen local restaurants. But I don't have any hard data on how that is unrolling.
I know a couple of times a few years ago, you actually went out into the district and met some of the business owners, restaurant owners. Obviously, with your health issue, it might be a little difficult.
Yeah, spreading disease does not.
Yes.
Don't know about you, but I have
Well,
dealt with.
we appreciate you keeping your germs to yourself. Yes.
Yeah, people in the past, when I was younger, used to see me come to events kind of wheezing along. I have definitely stopped doing that now, showing up and wheezing along. And well, I do understand people appreciate me coming. I don't think people appreciate me getting them sick.
Right. No, obviously. Yeah, of course. But a good opportunity to remind folks to support their local businesses.
Yeah, it's the 7th of May today, so there's still plenty of time to participate in AIPI month. Obviously, in Quincy, we have a large Asian population, but you also have Little Saigon and Dorchester is close by. You have a lot of restaurants also and businesses in Randolph. There's other locales you can go around the state, including places like Lowland, Lynn, obviously Boston, Chinatown. And, if you're in places like Worcester, there's a large Southeast Asian population as well as the South Asian population. And you'd be surprised how many different pockets of locations around the state where you have a number of retailers and restaurants that are Asian owned.
Yep. Topic totally out of the blue, Tacky. I want to just throw out there, and we don't have to delve into it deeply today, but maybe something to think about for future talks. Safe injection sites, and I guess your feeling about them.
Oh, I'll punt a little bit to John Keane on this, because Senator Keane has been in this a lot longer. There has been a number of countries doing pilots on this with very much mixed results. And I also have the same attitude about these mixed results. I'm not really warm to the idea, to the effectiveness level of these things where, for those who don't know, safe injection sites is where you have someone who has a substance abuse issue. Can get clean needles to give themselves drugs, which are illicitly purchased and be monitored in case something goes wrong. But it's under the category of it doesn't address the cause. It only perpetuates public health in terms of having clean needles and perhaps an overdose situation in a location where they could get some help. So it doesn't actually, become part of a larger treatment program. And if someone's just there to do injections and not seeking help, then you're not really solving the problem. You're trying to solve a public health issue strictly regarding the needles. And whether you have clean needles or not, they can lead to other diseases. This isn't a new issue, right? I mean, we've talked about this in the past, and I'm not very warm to the idea, as you can tell. Because to me, when it comes to things like substance abuse, it's a holistic approach in the sense that you need to address it in its entirety together. So, what are the economic situations? What is the housing situation? Is it a domestic issue? Is there underlying mental health issues or other type of stresses? What is the source and cause of it? Treatment programs are not overnight. You just don't detox for 48 hours and walk out all like normal, right? This is a constant battle in your life. You need therapy. Enforcement, counseling, and supportive groups, and also getting away from people that reinforce bad habits, right? Part of substance abuse problems that you tend to gravitate towards people that are like-minded who share the same bad habit you do or bad behavior, and you got to get away from that as well. So it's not as simple as like one thing. It's as I learned over the years, it's a series of issues that are individually personalized. To you as an individual, you're not a carbon copy person. You're not same as every other person with the same issue. And it takes time and effort, and willingness of the individual to want to seek help, but also a support system that will provide it. And I'm not confident that injection centers, are going to encourage that.
Yeah, it's something that's been on my mind for a while, and I meant to bring it up. And you're right. I'll direct it to Senator Keenan as well. I know that the state is supporting things like Narcan, right? The overdose reversal drug that, and that seems to have had some success. If somebody is in an overdose, really, you can save their life.
Yeah, I give that to the city of Quincy. A lot of credit to the mayor and the council, the police and fire regarding Narcan and EMS here, where the first community in the country that heavily utilizes as a public safety matter to address overdoses. And Manatee Community Health has been at the forefront of this as well. It does save lives. You still got to do the next step, what you do next after your life has been saved. So people think Narcan is a cure. It's not. It just helps inhibit drug from getting to your receptors in your brain long enough for you to get help in an overdose situation.
I know that some of the T stations have Narcan kits available now as well, right here in Quincy. So that's becoming more prevalent, and it's anybody can use them. You don't have to be a trained medical professional.
No, it's a nasal spray. I think one of the scarier things of having a seizure type moment, is trying to get people obviously stable enough to, use the nasal spray. And also, you got to make sure that the Narcan expiration dates are kept up. I mean, like all medications, they all expire at some point. And once they hit expiration, the effectiveness level goes down, which is why they have expiration, right? The effectiveness level goes down. So, it's a cost. Some of you may think it's a waste of money because you don't use it. And, what's the point, right? But it's a preventative measure that can save a life. And you're right, there is not a lot of training involved. It's a nasal spray. And I think that's pretty much that simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything coming up in the districts we should know about that you're aware of?
The Quincy 400 stuff, I've been getting emails on this for a number of different concerts going to May to June. I'm trying to think what district issues are coming up. South Cove Manor is having the annual meeting this month. Quincy Asian Resources is having their annual banquet. Quarry is having the annual banquet this month.
Oh, very good.
Obviously, memorial events are towards the end of the month with, different recognitions and ceremonies and remembrances around various cemeteries and memorials around the state, including the Memorial Day Parade, which started at Quincy Credit Union to the cemetery. That's going to go on Memorial Day Monday. So, and then I have the Asian American Pacific Islander Commission dinner on Saturday. There's a festival coming up. The fourth, is it the Saturday after this one? I have to make some time to go to Lowell for the Community Genocide Memorial. I'm trying to think what else. I'm getting an increasing number of requests that we're sorting out here. Trying to figure out which practice we get to.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, this is the time of year where organizations try and cram everything in before school gets out. That way, folks can go on their summer vacations.
Exactly. And organizations spend many months planning these events and they start to cram these things in, and sometimes they forget, or they think of me as like the afterthought on coming to an event. WGBH will be having a series of programs like they do every month, recognizing the month they're in. So actually AIPI month is, they'll be doing a lot of programming targeting that, as well as panels at WGBH, and strongly encourage people to take advantage and look at the programming there. To have it also on the internet now, like or it's not strictly on television anymore. We'll see what comes up. One of the funny thing is that during these months on streaming services, you can see promoting AIPI type stuff, and there's not a lot of it. When you look at compared to other ethnic groups that have this month. And what's really lacking is domestic production as opposed to foreign import entertainment. While it's great to celebrate and watch content from other countries and see how other people's slice of life, or how to do thrillers, or how to do mysteries or horror, entertainment. The lack of domestic creative entertainment regarding the AIP community, is still lacking. And, the Asian American Pacific Islander Commission will have like a documentary regarding the Bhutanese community and Western Mass that they've been promoting. And then Sakabe Chow, former mayor of Lowell, that has also a documentary out there as well. So, there's some smaller films out there, but they don't make the streaming services. So, again, I mean, it's in this country, despite the fact that Asian Americans have a history here since the colonial era, there isn't a whole lot of domestic product, entertainment product. And like I say, watch the streaming services, you can see how little there is.
Well, maybe we'll inspire somebody in the future. Who knows?
Now, who knows? Like I said, I'm always very proud and excited when there's some recognition from the entertainment industry. But it's still far and few between compared to everybody else.
Reach out to you as always, right?
Sure. The office is not sick, so have better audio than I am at the moment. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. I remind folks I do not control the suite. The suite's controlled, I think, by Catherine and Altrin. The way the phone system is set up, I'm just a guest of my suite. So be patient on the automated system. If the front desk is overwhelmed with calls, tacky.chan@aimhouse.gov, tacky.chan@aimhouse.gov. As you can tell, I do look at my materials, and our staff does discuss priorities regarding which ones to address first. State Representative Tacky Chan is the Facebook, and at Tacky Chan on X. Tackychan.org is a contact page, but also a resource page, which I'm kind of updating on a fairly semi-regular basis, probably every 6 or so months regarding information. MALegislature.gov, I heavily direct people to this legislature's website. It's very good. You could create your own login account and track bills on your own and watch public hearings. If you watch me last Tuesday, you can see me masked up and coughing. A storm. Last Tuesday during budget week, we actually did a hearing during budget week. I'm actually having a hearing on Monday. Hopefully, I will be better. But yeah, you can watch me just actually killing myself at a public hearing last Tuesday. Of course, here we are, Joe, on a weekly or biweekly basis, depending on our condition. And like a topic matter to discuss, obviously email Joe, and he will pick and choose emails to talk about. So, we strongly encourage artist participation through Joe, and check in with him in the morning for his 10-minute Quincy update.
Always appreciate it, Techie. I hope you're feeling better next time we talk.
Yeah, this has lingered. Let's hope next week I will be more audible.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Joe.